This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan Lemon, your host. If this is your first Geekscape, well, I like to talk pop culture, movies, video games, comic books, TV. Had a conversation with my producer earlier today, like 10 minutes before the show, about what we're about to do. We're going to talk about the Blue Beetle movie from Warner Brothers. That being said, we're in the middle of a strike. Hi, I'm a writer-director in the middle of a strike against major studios. And I'm about to talk about a major studio movie. I did this in 2007 during the strike. I did this a few weeks ago. We've talked about all sorts of studio stuff recently during the strike. But I want to remind you that the strike's still going on. People like Ian Kerner, who's going to join me here, his wife Stephanie. She's a striking writer. And maybe if you hear what we're talking about, wait until after the strike to watch it. Does that work, Ian? I can see you if you want to nod your head. Does that work, Ian? Can I say, like, hey, guys, we're going to tell you what we think of this. Don't go see it. Wait until the strike is over. Then go see it. Does that work? Can I do that? I don't know. It's a conversation that I had, so Geekscape, just know I'm conscious of it, and I'm looking to be back on the strike lines tomorrow, and I have a little pick in my hand. But today, my buddy Ian and I, we're going to be talking about this Blue Beetle movie based on the comic book. Maybe we'll just talk about the comic book and tell you that there might be a movie out about it. But we're definitely going to talk about the comic book a lot, because as you heard in the last episode, if you're subscribing to the Geekscape on the audio, I'm big time into comics right now. And that X-Men Fall of X stuff, it's got me amped. You know, Ian, who's going to be on the show here to talk comic book movies with me, he was the man who said, hey, Jonathan, you're not going to want to skip this X-Men, you know, gala issue. It's not just some swimsuit issue tie-in thing. It's an important book. And I picked it up and I read it, and man, my jaw dropped with every page turn as that book reset the X-Men universe. Really big into comics. And you know what? Because I'm big into comics, I went to see a movie. I don't know how to talk about it. I honestly don't. Geekscape, you're watching me struggle a little bit. Went to see this movie based on one of my favorite characters, Blue Beetle. And we're going to tell you what we think here in a bit. But yeah, subscribe to Geekscape. We got some, speaking of people who are having a tough time during a strike, my buddy Adam Sigel's on the show next week to talk about this Nander Fordor movie he has with Simon Pegg, and Simon can't come on the show. Adam can come on the show. He's a director. But when I got to Comic-Con, his producer Claire, she had just gotten back from set. We'll talk about it next week, but she'd just gotten back from set in Arkansas, where Adam's shoot got shut down by SAG because they were waiting on the paperwork to say that they had an interim agreement. And Claire had just come back from Arkansas in that situation, trying to make sure that this indie movie didn't get shut down. It's pretty stressful. So maybe he'll tell that story about making this next movie as he talks about this past movie, Nander Fordor, which is coming out here in about like a week and a half. And it's got Simon Pegg in it, former Geekscape friend. It's got Ruthie O'Connell, friend. And a few other people on it. So Adam's my guest next week. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit of Blue Beetle. it's so ambiguous. But we'll be right back for it. And here we go. Strap yourselves in for some Geekscape. you're in the right spot. All right, Geekscapists, welcome to the Geekscape podcast. We're going to be talking some Blue Beetle. So if you haven't watched the Blue Beetle movie, wait until after the strike is over to go see it. We are going to be talking about it. Do not go see this movie. Wait until after the strike to see this movie. But we are going to be talking about it with my friend Ian. I think that's what I do. I don't know. I was just talking to my producer about this whole Geekscape thing and what we do, because I love talking comics, I love talking video games, I love talking pop culture. That means movie and TV, and right now that strike's going on. All right, let's get Ian in here. Ian can spoil this thing for you. Ian, you can talk about the Blue Beetle movie.
I can. So what are you saying? You can't talk about it?
Yeah. Dude, I don't know, because here's the thing. Like, I went clean through 2007 strike talking about this stuff. Remember the writer's strike 2007? Yeah,
Jonathan,
I literally had, and I don't have any projects with the,
with the studio. You have nothing to do with this project.
Nothing to do with it. Okay, so Ian, you don't Ian, have a problem. Ian, as my legal counsel, as my manager.
I'm not advising you legally, but I'm telling you that my understanding is people can't promote things that they're involved with. That's what the limitation is. And you're not promoting it. You're talking about having seen it. So don't give a recommendation maybe, but you know, personally, I'm going to say I want people to see this movie. Generally speaking, it was really good and it needs the box office. So I'm very uncomfortable. This idea of wait to see it.
No. I know. And Ian, as a Latino, I think that this movie is important. And I think that having a movie like this at the Latino box office is important. And it's a effing shame that this movie came out during the freaking writers and actors strike, because this is a movie that I think a lot of people should get behind, regardless of their affiliation, regardless of their, I mean, as a Latino, I had this movie as one of the most important movies I wanted to see this year. I was so stoked to see this movie. Yeah. And I agree with you on this movie. This is a movie that I described it to a friend of mine today, and I said it's just a blast. And this is a movie that I wish had changed places with The Flash and gotten the promotion The Flash had gotten, because I feel like coming off of the Shazam sequel, then getting a movie like Blue Beetle, which I think is 100% quality, and then going into Flash, I think Warner Brothers would have done a little better with the goodwill that the Blue Beetle would have gotten from a more successful box office, because this is a movie that I'm going to be in love with for several years to come. And I hope it gets sequels, and I hope that it has a place in the future DC Entertainment Universe under James Gunn and Peter Safran, because not that you should support them right now, but the Blue Beetle movie, I think, is a success on every level. The effects, the story, the writing, the directing, the action, the relevance, that's not a word, but you know what I'm trying to say, like just the love letter that it is to the Blue Beetle property.
I don't think I told you this. I went to a screening and the director spoke afterwards, and great guy, real, as is pretty evident from the movie, loves the character, gets the character, gets the greater DC, you know, universe of it. What few Easter eggs are in there are because, you know, he wanted to do a lot more. They didn't let him. There's a couple people aren't even aware. There's some things that there are actually Easter eggs that aren't necessarily obvious. Like, he purposely stuck Oreos in there a few times as just a little nod to Martian Manhunter. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Ian, I kind of love that there weren't more Easter eggs in this movie that would have tied it or buoyed it DC Entertainment Universe. Like,
it was very smart.
In Geekscape, it's like whatever you think of the DC movies prior to this, or whatever you anticipate the DC movies being after this, this is a movie that really feels like it's on its own and is kind of cool in that way. That this is a Blue Beetle movie. You don't need to know a lot about the DC Entertainment Universe going in. You don't need to know about the comics. You don't need to know any of this. This is just a fun, classic superhero film. And I love the character. And I love that it, again, is a love letter to the history of that character in the different, the two prior iterations of the Blue Beetle, Ted Kord and Dan Garrett. My jaw dropped at how much Ted Kord stuff is in this movie. Actually,
I was very happy, and it's right away in the credits. They instantly in the opening credits, you see that Dan Garrett and Ted Kord are completely referenced, which I didn't know if Dan Garrett would be. I thought that was very cool. Yeah, you know, I mean,
and Ian, I'm going to ask you to give history to who those characters are for people who are listening to this and they know squat about Blue Beetle, but Geekscape is, this is the third Blue Beetle. This is Jaime Reyes, who's the third Blue Beetle in history. Arguably, there's two Dan Garretts, but this is definitely the third Blue Beetle.
Right. And here's the thing, is to understand a little bit of the history. You know, DC is known for having bought up a lot of comic companies that existed before. So one of those companies was Charlton Comics. Semi-famously, the Watchmen was actually originally meant to be the Charlton characters. And DC at the time said, you know, like, Elmer was literally writing the Charlton characters as Watchmen. And then instead he just did analogs of them because DC got a little skittish about it. Because
it's a good thing he did, because one of them is Peacemaker, right? Yeah. Like, we've seen Peacemaker. We've seen Captain Atom. We've seen those characters in various versions.
Well, they went in different ways and different things. And yeah, I mean, it ends up being its own thing and in many ways, probably much better than it ever would have been if it was too much tied to that continuity, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so in fact, Night Owl and Watchmen is based on that version of Blue Beetle, on the Ted Kord version. But the Charlton Comics originally had Dan Garrett, and the Ted Kord version was still published by Charlton. And DC basically, in the first Crisis, Crisis on Infinite Earths, when they merged things, they brought the Ted Kord Blue Beetle character over with the Dan Garrett history still being intact.
And that history is what, Ian? Like, because it leads to the conversation about the Scarab and the powers. The Scarab, right?
This guy finds a Scarab and he had mystical powers that he got from the Scarab. And then Ted Kord got the Scarab, but it never worked for him. Okay.
And so he had to use like gadget-based invention powers, which we see a lot in the movie.
So he was inspired by the idea of a Blue Beetle. So he made, the ship, and he made gadgets. And, so he had this company, Kord Industries, which was in the movie. And we actually saw the gadgets. I mean, in fact, that was one aspect of the movie that was, for me, perfect.
I couldn't believe how much of the bug ship that we had in this movie.
Yeah,
the bug ship is all in this movie. Yeah. And I was in love with it. And I kind of love that Jaime is an outsider. You know, he gets the Scarab attached to him very quickly. Ted Kord's daughter's involved. Ted Kord's sister's involved. Ted Kord's sister in Ted Kord's absence has taken over the company. That's when we meet her. It's Susan Sarandon's character. And Jaime Reyes is this college grad whose family's about to lose everything, lose the house. They're, this Hispanic Latino family living in a place that's completely getting gentrified by corporations very quickly. And I thought that was a really economic directing choice. When you see him coming into the airport at the beginning, he's coming home from college. You see him wearing a Gotham University sweater in the movie. And you see signs. It says, welcome to this town, this fictitious kind of Miami town. And there's Kord Industries everywhere, but also it's like tax-free haven and it's super corporate friendly.
Right.
And then you see the dichotomy between the wealth
disparity. You also see LexCorp in there, you know? So that's one big Easter egg. So speaking of the history stuff, so, they reference the Dan Garrett stuff and that he had powers from the Scarab and that Ted was never able to access them, which is similar to the comics. In the comics, the Scarab ends up going to the Rock of Eternity and the wizard there, and then the wizard of one of the many times
the wizard has died. Adam stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because that's the thing, is the Scarab, the historical Scarab, is seemingly tied in with all that semi-Egyptian, Bialian, all there.
Gregorian stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So, but then it gets knocked back to Earth and ends up in El Paso, because originally it's El Paso. Later they came up with Palmera City, which they ended up going with here. But originally it's El Paso, and it jumps on Jaime. Mm-hmm. You come to find out that it isn't mystical, it's alien. Which, by the way, is an interesting thing that they also did with Hawkman. Like, you know, mystical Hawkman, alien Hawkman. It's something DC's played with a bit.
Are we going to talk about Black Adam? Because I thought we were never going to talk about that movie again.
Well, we don't need to. It's just that if they had wanted to, they could have done that connection. And it's better for not. They don't need to. I happen to love the version. I love the Jaime version of a Black Beetle, of a Blue Beetle, excuse me. And I think this movie does a really good job with it. You know, they do a couple of things that are different that were interesting.
What were the differences, Ian?
Well, first of all, no daughter. I'll get to her in a second. I do have some points to make about her.
Yeah. But
for the bigger one, I want to make is daughter's sister.
Not in the comics.
Okay. I know sister. And to me, when I first heard about that character and even having watched it, I felt like they did a lift of a different DC superhero's nemesis character in that character, which is Veronica Kale, who's Wonder Woman's nemesis. I felt that character very much felt like Veronica Kale to me.
The Susan Sarandon character, Ted Nugent's sister.
You see that?
Who's taken over the company, and now she's going to use it for nefarious means. And I got to tell you what I really got pumped at as well, and it shows the replacement of another Blue Beetle-involved character from the comics who I felt the absence of, Maxwell Lord, who we saw in Wonder Woman 1984. Maxwell Lord in the OMAC project, we got Brother Eye in Wonder Woman 1984, but having OMACs all up in this movie... Yeah. I did not know that the OMACs were in this movie, and the plot line in Geekscape is we didn't see the movie, and we'll wait until after the strike to do so. I'm kidding. The plot line is that Ted Kord's sister has taken over the company because Ted Kord's disappeared. There's mysteries as to what happened to him. Sit through the credits. And Ted Kord's sister wants to find the Scarab because it has an alien power that she can use to power a group of super soldier, like robotic super soldiers called OMACs, which is a like suit type thing that goes into your spine and it helps you have superpowers like being able to punch through walls, being able to jump, almost like a Tony Stark Iron Man suit, but it needs the Scarab to really get to another level of dominance. And she wants the Scarab to be unlocked. When the daughter of Ted Kord finds out about this, she tries to smuggle the Scarab out of the Ted Kord business. She gives it to Jaime, who's in there for a job interview and this and that, to meet up with her. And he gets it stuck to himself. And I thought that was hilarious. You get the superhero sequence you see in a lot of movies of like, whoa, 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 how does this work? Slow down. I thought that was fun.
But here's the thing about this movie.
But now she needs it back. The bad guy needs it back to still make her super suit, even if it means killing Jaime to get the Scarab back.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
She doesn't care.
The thing about this movie that I think it's really novel. I mean, everyone knows the family's a big part of it, but more than being a big part of it, they're in on it from the get-go.
They know he's a superhero. There's they watch no him discovery thing.
Yeah, they watch it happen. And I mean, and that's just so, it's just such a different take. I mean, I know my wife, you know, when she saw the trailer, I was like, oh, I've seen this before. I was like, you haven't, you know, it's not the same thing.
It's not Miss Marvel, for example, which we saw a year or so ago.
It's
year
not Miss Marvel.
And she's keeping a secret from the family.
There, you know, people have said to me, oh, it feels like Spider-Man crossed with Iron Man. Well, yes and no, but it's not. I mean, it's Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel since it's a teenager, and that's it. I mean, besides the fact that he's Latino and the family's so completely involved and all that, you know, it doesn't have that angst. I mean, there's some angst because he has money problems, but it's very, very different in a really, really great way.
I love the family. I love the father character. The father character in that relationship kind of reminded me, obviously, of the Black Panther stuff that we've seen before. In Geekscape, I think that's the emotional heart, is Jaime's relationship with his father. And then I got to give props to George Lopez and the rest of the cast that makes up that family, because they were hilarious.
They're absolutely hilarious. Great.
They're not just there for commentary. They go through their own arcs as well.
The sister's great.
I really loved this thing. I thought this movie was so much fun. And for people who are feeling, you know, just complete, fatigue to the whole superhero thing, this felt like a fresh film. This felt like a lot of fun. This felt like a movie that you could take your niece or nephew to, or you could go to yourself and just have fun. This felt like a movie that didn't have the baggage of being attached to a major cinematic universe. It was on its own thing. And that's why this is a movie that I thought was easy to root for.
Absolutely. And yet, I mean, I'm hopeful that, you know, I mean, I think it comes back in some iteration. I don't know that we get another Blue Beetle movie, but I hope, you know, from what I hear, the character's going to, you know, stick around and
into the James Gunn, Peter Safran era. You might see Jaime somewhere. Yeah, this movie is a success. It may not be a success at the box office, but this movie is a success. Let's talk a little bit about the amount of Ted Kord we got in this movie, because the once they get to the Ted Kord stuff and the daughter smuggles Jaime away and says, hey, we gotta find out what the suit is doing to you. My aunt is out. She's looking for this thing. We got to keep it from her because she's going to build super soldiers with it. And that's not what my father wanted with the legacy of his company. Once they get to like the Ted Kord Beetle Cave, like the Bat Cave underneath Ted Kord's mansion,
which was awesome.
You immediately see Dan Garrett's outfit.
Yeah. And Ted's.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the third outfit with the pillow?
So that's the thing I wanted to talk about. They set up something in this movie and I really wanted to, and I know we were supposed to have other, you know, people on also. I really wanted to discuss this as a group.
Well, but Justin's running down to the local Radio Shack. He promised his friend Kevin he was going to be on this episode. But then when Justin tried to log in, I could hear our audio back through his speakers and then back in. And he's, I guess, using another Commodore 64 or something. So when he gets back from Radio Shack, he can maybe log in or something.
So here's the thing is they had it set up in this movie that his daughter was basically going to be the sidekick. You know, he had made, you know, a gauntlet for her and all that and a little costume for her. And then he disappeared. And so my question that I wanted to pose is, does that feel just so ridiculously derivative because you have, you know, obviously Batman and Robin and you have Speedy and Wonder Girl, you know, and here's a fully made up character that Blue Beetle is going to have one also, or does it feel like it fits perfectly because that's what the DC heroes did?
I didn't think about that because when you start to see the Ted Kord, when they're, it's like, okay, let's go. In the movie Geekscape, Jaime ends up getting kidnapped by Ted Kord's sister, and they're going to try and kill him to detach the scarab so that they can put it in the OMAX. But first, they're going to download everything from the OMAX for the scarab to put in the OMAX. It's a painful process. The family's got to band together with Ted Kord's daughter to get in the bug ship and go rescue Jaime. I think this whole sequence is so much fun. But because the Ted Kord stuff, like the gauntlets, the Gatling gun you see Grandma use, the ship that you see George pilot, all this stuff, because the family is all hands-on with all the Ted Kord stuff, it didn't feel like there was a distinct sidekick that was ever on the way. There's a moment where Ted Kord's sister looks at that third empty costume slot with some weird pillow attached to the stomach, and she has this longing look, but it felt like that was some kind of... That wasn't clarified, and I don't think the mid-credit scene of Ted Kord trapped in some kind of cyberverse, computer cyberverse, I don't think that either clarified what that third costume was.
I think they went out of their way with Ted Kord to, you know, knowing that, I mean, we know Booster Gold is coming. So I think we're going to get Ted Kord.
That's been announced, yeah.
And this sets up that Ted Kord's out there.
And why is it Sudeikis who's going to play him?
Well, maybe it is.
Did you see the artwork in the mansion?
Yeah.
But it looked like Jason Sudeikis.
Because they actually, a statement was made that, you know, you think that would be great casting. But the bottom line is they're not locked in. It's artwork. It's very intentional. They didn't lock in an actor. So they don't have to then, if they recast it, whatever, it just still lines up. So I think that was good. But no, but if you recall, you know, one of the outfits looked like it's a sidekick's outfit. And she straight up says that gauntlet was made for her. Mm. With the Nintendo,
it's a power glove that's turned into like basically a Miss Marvel construct force gauntlet.
Yeah,
but the thing about that though, again, is that was the plan before Jaime's family came into this, before the Scarab merged with Jaime. I think going forward into a Blue Beetle movie, it's awesome to see the Blue Beetle third iteration and second iteration in those two families kicking ass. I think that this is straight up a family franchise now. I think adding Booster Gold to it, I think you take whatever version of the Blue Beetle, it's got to be Ted Kord, maybe it's Jaime, but the Booster Gold stuff is its own thing. And you can remove Blue Beetle from this, but when you see the Blue Beetle stuff doing the Blue Beetle thing, I think this is a family movie. I think it's families doing positive problem-solving stuff together. I think the tone of this movie was fun, awesome. This is one that you feel like you're sharing. I was so confident in this movie walking out of it, and then I saw the box office, and I was like, oof. Geekscapists, if you ever wonder why actors are paid what they're paid, it's so that they can promote these films.
And that's not part of it.
Not having actors to promote these films is the reason that we're getting delays on several projects. It's the reason that Sony has voiced that they've moved Kraven in their non-Spider-Man slate, because without the spider, what's Kraven really about? You got to have Aaron Taylor Johnson at least going on some Tonight mm-hmm. shows to do it. You saw today that Dune 2 got delayed to 2024, because we don't think maybe the strike will even be over by December. So that December date shifted. This is real stuff. And I really, again, hope that Blue Beetle as a film franchise is not a casualty. Seeing these characters in other DC movies, it sounds like something that James Gunn and Peter Safran are perfect for. Because, guys, that Superman casting and the fact that they cast Metamorpho, that we're getting Metamorpho in a Superman movie, like, and the casting is perfect. I cannot believe that this is, I mean, you thought you were in a geek golden age before. It gives me high hopes for what they're doing going forward. Like,
yeah,
James Gunn really knows the material.
I'm hopeful. There's no reason that as much of this movie as Gunn wants doesn't survive it. The box office makes me concerned about there possibly being, you know, a direct sequel, but there can be. By the way, I loved Ted Kord's daughter. I thought she was great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Brazilian actress, our friend Gui Pereira, who you guys know from Geekscape. Remember, he directed Cowboy Heart that I wrote and with Gui, and we went down to Brazil and made it. Gui made another movie, and that Brazilian actress who plays Ted Kord's daughter, he texted me and goes, she's friends with everybody in my cast. We thought about using her or something like that. I was like, oh, that's cool. She seems like a nice person. Mm-hmm. I could definitely hear the Brazilian accent versus the Spanish accent, which is kind of funny. But
well, they said that her mother was Brazilian.
Cool. She said her mother was Brazilian. So
they just kind of wrote that in for the
game. I love how they did their homework. I love how they did their homework on the Latino
you
stuff.
You know that
I love
she was
how they
up,
did their homework on the Blue Beetle stuff.
She was up for the Supergirl in Flash. And it came down to the two of them. And because of COVID, she couldn't travel because she was actually down in Brazil. So that's why I went to Sachikaya.
Well, I got to tell you, this is a pretty good consolation prize because I think this
is a really
great movie. I loved the Supergirl in the Flash. I love that actress. I love that Supergirl in the Flash.
Yeah. Well, I hope we see both of them again. But, you know, it remains to be seen.
Ian, what are you hearing on the inside? I know you have sources.
In terms of what? In terms of these characters?
Yeah, these characters and what we're seeing on the beginning of this.
Too early, nothing yet. You know, it's, I think you saw they're announcing a timeline in Creature Commandos.
It's animated.
Yeah, it's animated, but it's going to be part of it. So that's the big thing Gunn's doing is anything they're doing going forward is all the same continuity. It all counts. But, you know, then it's going to be Superman Legacy and we'll see what comes beyond that. You know,
I gotta tell you, I mean,
they can pick and choose anything they want. Listen, I've said to you for a long time, you know, I think Gunn said we get to pick and choose. It's a multiverse, and that enables him to keep as much of the stuff he's done as he wants. Mm-hmm. So the Suicide Squad and Peacekeeper is going to remain intact.
We're clearly doing that with the Waller series. That's clearly a part of it.
Exactly. James Gunn's wife isn't out of work.
One of the characters we have not talked about, probably the most famous superhero in the film, you haven't even mentioned, Ian.
Batman?
Batman's not in the movie, Geekscape.
He's referenced.
Yeah, he's referenced in the movie. Now, let me see if I can do this without destroying my desk. The one superhero I have on my desk, Ian, that is in the movie that Ian has not even referenced, and this is easily the most popular superhero on screen in the movie, right here. Mr. Chapolin himself. Chapolin Colorado has that's a much bigger reference in the movie. I have one of these things, little Chapolin who climbs on my desk. Ian, let me show you this thing. Look, Geekscapists who are watching this, I have a little Chapolin. And I got to tell you, there's a sequence in the movie where George Lopez, who's a little bit of a garage inventor himself, has some contraptions and he uses to break into Kord Industries with Jaime and Ted Kord's daughter. And he calls this thing the Chapolin, this device. He goes, I call it the Chapolin. And I was like, oh, that's cool. It's red and yellow, like Chapolin Colorado. But, and I was super excited about it. Then later in the movie, there's cartoons of Chapolin in the movie. And then in the end credits, there's a Chapolin sequence. When do we get our Chapolin movie, Ian? Please.
I haven't heard anything on that.
Look at this little guy.
I think this might be the closest we get, but hard for me to say.
Look at this. That was one of my favorite parts of the movie because any Latino kid who had a childhood where they went to visit the grandparents in Latin America or here like knows all about Chaplin, and having him in that much of a movie, even as like a joke, a throwaway, the references, that it was pretty great. Again, Geekscape, I can't say this enough. This is a movie that did its homework. And yeah. You watch these movies and you're like, oh, do the filmmakers know the origin stuff? Do the filmmakers know the source material? Holy crap.
And here's what's interesting about this movie. I don't know, you know, I mean, I think it's probably worth saying because not everyone would know this. You know, there was this back and forth going on of different agendas as all these regimes at Warner Brothers kept changing. This movie was originally developed to be a direct from HBO Max. And then
they almost lost it.
And then they decide, no, we're going to go direct to theatrical. And they scrambled. They threw a little more money, but not a ton more. This was only a 57-day shoot.
Wow. Every part of this is impressing me, dude.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's a really good, solid movie. It deserves to be seen. You know? Yeah. It has heart. It's fun. But the effects are really good.
And it's well written. And Geekscape is it passes the litmus test as both a superhero movie, a Blue Beetle movie, a DC movie, and
it's a great family movie.
A family movie, and again, like a movie that Latino audiences can say isn't just pandering. It's not just stereotypes. You start to get a little bit like, oh, is it going to do a stereotype with like the deportation? Because two of the members of the family, nope. We're going to move away from that. We're going to go to humor and heart, and we're just going to keep nailing humor and heart. And I loved it. And I got to tell you, Ian, we got to talk about the infinite crisis of it all, because so much of Blue Beetle's story, he came in crisis.
Jaime's introduced in crisis, and that's that brother-eye connection.
Well, we'll talk about the first crisis that introduced the Charlton characters to DC. That is the crisis in 86.
Yes.
And the Charlton characters were bought, and this is a crazy story. Paul Levitz bought those characters for $5,000.
Who was the editor-in-chief of DC.
He was the editor-in-chief of DC. I have his card, and like I should try and get him on Geekscape, because I met him at a Boom like holiday party years ago.
Cool.
And Paul Levitz was a pretty nice guy. And the story is that Dick Giordano, who used to work for Charlton when in its onset, and you got to talk about who helped create Ted Kord, no less than the co-creator of Spider-Man, right? Like, this is amazing. And as I'm reading research about these characters and being like, okay, talk to me about the Ted Kord, talk to me about the Dan Garrett. I'm reading that, you know, all these characters have so many important comic book icons. But Giordano, who was one of the big editors over at Charlton, which was such a small outfit back then. They were running on an old school 1930s, 1940s printing press out of go read that Wikipedia on Charlton Comics when you get a chance. I'm surprised that they lasted from the 40s to the late 80s, and then ultimately the thing burned down and fell apart. And in 1999, that's how long that thing lasted. And they were printing comics off this thing. But Dick Giordano, he was part of that 60s movement of bringing the Blue Beetle together and getting all those things together, because Charlton wasn't really printing superhero books that much. Most of their stuff was crime and romance. And they had these superhero books, which mainly are the Watchmen characters. And those are the ones that Paul Levitz, as a gift to Giordano, who was now an editor at DC in 1980, 82, 83, he bought these characters from Charlton, who wanted nothing to do with superheroes. They were printing like TV adaptation comics, like the Partridge Family. Mm-hmm. He bought them for $5,000 a piece. He bought Blue Beetle, Peacemaker, The Question, $5,000 a piece. Captain Atom, $5,000 a piece. And now they're DC characters, but they weren't introduced for several years. They were introduced in the original Crisis,
right,
on Infinite Earths.
They gave them their own Earth, and then they brought them in.
And then, so what happened in Infinite Crisis? I own those issues.
So, I mean, in terms of Blue Beetle, it's, you know, Jaime gets the Scarab because, you know, the Rock of Eternity is like destroyed, and that's where it was with the Wizard. And so it lands, and Booster comes looking for it, Booster Gold. So Booster brings in the Batman. He helps in the fight against Brother Eye.
But also Maxwell Lord kills Ted Kord.
That happens in the countdown.
On the lead up. The countdown to Crisis.
Yes.
And talk to me about that, because by the time Jaime shows up, there's no Ted Kord in the DC universe. He's been killed by Maxwell Lord. Yes. And Maxwell Lord, again, is... I feel Maxwell Lord's presence in this movie.
Yeah.
Because of the OMAC-ness of all of it.
Now, since the rebirth and everything, you have a different version, and you actually have Jaime working at Cord Industries and Ted Around. But okay. That's more recently.
Okay.
So, but originally, no. So yeah.
There's no Dan Garrett.
No.
I figure with like Hawkman and with Black Adam and Shazam and all that stuff, having the Rock of Eternity and having the Egyptology and all that archaeology origin of which Dan Garrett is a major part. I think that stuff needs to kind of be sidestepped on the cinema.
You didn't need any of that. It's fine. What was interesting to me, and I think they did a good job of this because you don't need it yet, because that is actually how it started, is, and you don't get many answers about, you know, just that it's alien, it's all you know. And you don't get anything more. And there is a lot more there. And in fact, you know, Young Justice, actually, that show dived into that a lot.
Explain it to me, because maybe we see it on the big screen.
There's an alien race called the Reach, and they send these scarabs out, and it's a colonizing thing. And they take over, and then the scarab takes over the mind of the host, and they act for the Reach, and they subjugate planets.
And how is Jaime able to repel that?
Jaime has a special bond with the scarab, with Kajada, and he's an anomaly, so he fights against it.
When he yelled Kajada on the big screen, you got pumped, right?
Yeah.
Because that's, again, another deep cut that shows the amount of love that they had for this character going into this movie. I can't stress enough, like, how
impressed I was. Well, and that's the thing, is the fact that they did that, it's definitive that, you know, that the Scarab Ascension, and, I mean, that backstory, it's there, it's just not explored yet. It's to come out, and ultimately the idea of the Reach, both in the comics and even on Young Justice, which I thought did a really good job with that stuff, is that it's, you know, he's now this giant weapon of mass destruction and potentially of subjugation, and that leads to, there's other scarabs will come, and you know, so other beetles that he has to fight and maybe liberate, depending what storyline they do.
Did that come before or after Invincible? Because it's a very Invincible story.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I heard a little crunchy, and we'll see if I can cut that out.
I see why you say it's Invincible.
Because it's very similar to what was going on in Invincible, right?
Similar.
Okay.
Young Justice, I would say, did that after Invincible, and I would say Blue Beetle probably also after Invincible first did that, but it's only a little bit like that. I mean, it's like, so for listeners that don't know, so in Invincible, the idea is Invincible's father, Omni-Man, who's a Superman analog, who when Invincible starts both in the comics and on the show, is basically Superman, and he has a regular family, and he's had a kid, and the kid's been waiting to get his powers, and he finally gets them. And the twist that you find out, and in the comic, I think it takes about 7-8 issues or so. The twist is that he's actually there to colonize. He's actually a bad guy. He's been a good guy all these years, for years and years, just to lull Earth into, you know, a false sense of security. And part of what the Viltrumites do is they actually impregnate just to propagate the species. And the idea being that their genetics is so strong that if they can have the child, it ends up being very Viltrumite-like. So Invincible actually ends up being just as powerful as his father, but he fights his father.
So the Reach is more like an alien weapon.
Yes.
And the old Viltrumites are a race. And therein lies the difference.
No. The Reach is a race also.
But the weapons are what they use, not themselves. They use these scarabs, the weapons. They're like...
Think of it like this. Yeah.
That's like a seed.
The scarab, in a weird way, is an analog to a Green Lantern ring, except that more like Venom and the Quintar, it's symbiotic, and it takes over the host normally. The programming overrides the host. Doesn't kill it. It's just they're there and they don't have a say.
And it won't leave until you kill it.
It's part of you.
Like, we are not going to see Dan Garrett because the scarab is not on him.
Dan Garrett's dead.
Right. Yeah. Right. Otherwise, the scarab wouldn't be free.
Yeah.
All right, Ian. What else do you want to say about this Blue Beetle movie? Other than I really think people should go see it.
I thought it was great. It's fun. Really, everything about it. It's really, it's a lot of fun. I don't think there's any other Easter eggs that we need to talk about. But I think that it's set up in such a way, as we said, that it's not beholden to any specific version of the characters it references, which is great. You know, yes, it references Superman, Batman, and Flash. There's going to be Superman, Batman, and Flash. So that's fine. So I think in all those ways, it easily gets to continue. It's just a question of where.
Yeah.
I think Solo is great. You know?
But this character can drop into the upcoming.
Anywhere. And I would expect Booster Gold. You know?
Yeah.
Some version. I mean, at least Ted there. Honestly, as I was watching it, my whole thought was, oh, Ted's missing. He should be with Booster. You know? And I was like, God, I wish that would be in the tag. But we probably can't get that because they, you know, either aren't that far along or didn't know whatever else. But the tag we got can easily line up with that.
Yeah, when George Lopez's character Rudy turns on the computer and starts figuring out all the technology in Ted Kord's bug cave, I'm going to call it, it activates a computer. And in the mid-credits, you hear Ted Kord's voice over the computer saying, hey, this is Ted Kord. Whoever turned on my computer, you have to get a message out. Like, and I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, could he be in the future with Booster Gold? Could he be doing this and that? Like,
and maybe. And we don't know, which cool is fine. Absolutely fine.
And all I got to say is I really hope when the strike is over, we go back to having superhero movies from DC and Warner Brothers, that this is a character that does not get forgotten, because this movie is a success. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. And I was telling a friend of mine that for a industry that is supposedly experiencing superhero fatigue, we in 2023, we have gotten a really great Blue Beetle movie. We've gotten an amazing Ninja Turtles movie. We've gotten a Spider-Verse sequel, and we got a very, very good Guardians film. And sure, you may think that some of the lows were very low, but we got some really good superhero movies, and Blue Beetle is one of them that you just, if you're a superhero fan, if you're just a fan of fun movies, this is not one that you want to skip.
I agree.
I'm rooting for it. Ian, I talked about that X-Men, you know, Hellfire Gala. Man, Ian,
I told you.
Guys, I'm somebody who was getting, and I talked about it last week, Geekscape is on the audio only. So if you're watching this live on video, go and subscribe to the audio version, because I'm talking a little bit before each episode in an exclusive audio little portion before we get into the interviews, talking about specific things. Like Heidi and I talked about the Barbie movie last week. I talked about the X-Men Hellfire Gala and Fall of X and how pumped I am about that stuff. I was getting tired of the X-Men books just because they were spread out thin. And as I told you, the big events weren't happening in the core X-Men books. I felt like I was being manipulated and buying tie-ins and anniversaries and ancillary miniseries. And here we go. We're collapsing the X-Men books back into a revamp. And they're doing it in the most violent and engaging way. It's cool.
They've done some interesting things so far. And I'll say this is what it's early days, but they've folded it back into, it doesn't feel separate from the rest of the Marvel Universe.
Finally. Yeah.
Specifically, Tony Stark is directly involved.
Dude, Tony Stark being almost responsible for the Stark Sentinels is awesome. And him and, I mean, because here's the thing. He would not have been a part of the Stark Sentinels had he not gone on this crusade to spend all of his money getting weapons off the black market. Right. He spent all his money. He had no money. He could not protect his company from being taken over. Stark gets taken over, and they get used to make better Sentinels. Yeah. The other one is Captain America putting together the Uncanny Avengers and the Unity Squad. And so that's pretty cool. And there's one more book we're not talking about is Kamala Khan has a book where she's clearly a mutant, but she's a little undercover.
Right. So again, that's the obvious thing where they're lining up more with the MCU. It remains to be seen whatever else, but it does feel to me like this idea of mutants. Just removing Krakoa already changes things. We'll see what they do with Arako, you know, which is Mars.
That's Mars.
You know, but there's some interesting ideas coming out of it. Realm of X came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you got that
book. I didn't pick it up yet. I haven't been to the store. It's bold.
You know what it is?
Run the name past me again. It was
Realm of X.
Realm of X. Go. Is that the one that's what's her name? Eliana.
Yes, among others.
Yeah, Ileana, and they're in a different dimension.
Well,
it's like the New Mutants title.
Yeah, except for where they are.
They're not in Limbo, though, are they?
Nope.
Because Limbo's on Earth. I was just reading the Spider-Man stuff, and Limbo has its own tower in Manhattan.
Vanaheim.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Yeah. So that's tying into all the Thor stuff and the Thor revamp, because Thor's getting a revamp.
Yeah.
I kind of like this. I'm kind of digging what Marvel is doing right now. They're forcing me to spend more money on comics. That's
kind of cool. Yeah, as I said, they've pushed it back into tying in with the rest of the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I should say the Marvel comics, you know,
right?
The
rest of
616.
But the MCU is taking a lead from the publishing. Talk to me though, because maybe you disagree with me. But when friends come out to me and they say, "Hey, man, this Krakoa stuff has been so good. This is how they got to do in the MCU." But ultimately, to me, in my heart, I think the best, most engaging version of the X-Men.
They do anything like that.
Geekscape is the X-Men protect those who fear them and persecute them. You have to have them as a minority. You can't do the Krakoa stuff on the right now on the big screen. They got to start out as minorities. Does it mean it's going to be a retread of some of the stuff we've seen? Yeah, you're going to get a new Magneto retread. You're going to get a Wolverine retread, but it's going to be great.
Let's talk about this for a second, because this is a good place for this.
Yeah.
The idea of doing Krakoa in the MCU, you already have Atlantis. You already have Wakanda. So what? We're going to do Krakoa now the mutants are just living their own nation, and it's done already.
If you're going to do Krakoa, and Kevin Feige's watching this, if you're going to do Krakoa, let's do it as a monster island. Let's do it as a location that's treacherous. Let's do it as a location. And let's do
giant size one.
You could also, that's what I said last week. I said, let's talk giant size one when the X-Men had to get rescued from Krakoa with a brand new team. And then, you know what? If you're going to do Krakoa, I want to see the Savage Land.
The island that walks like a man.
I want to see Genosha, and I also want to see Asteroid M. Let's do real X-Men.
Sure.
Let's do Asteroid M.
You know, the problem that the movies have, and of course, you know, you read comics long enough and certain concepts will have some analogs here and there. But when you've done something even remotely similar to something already in a movie, it feels like it's an also-ran, and that's really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard. I mean, here we are, and, you know, I mean, how many movies are we at now? You know, and it's going for, what are we on? 15 years?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for it to feel fresh. I think that's a big problem it's going through right now. People talk about superhero fatigue. I mean, I guess it's a way of looking at it, but I keep saying, in terms of the Marvel movies, the good movies do well.
Mm-hmm. Guardians
when they're good, they do well. DC is in a different place, okay? Because I'm sorry, people point to superhero fatigue with something like Blue Beetle or superhero fatigue about Flash. You know what? DC destroyed the freaking brand. They did it years ago. Honestly, all the way back to Zack Snyder, they didn't build it. They didn't earn it. They said, Marvel's done it. People know that we're DC, so we're just going to throw ours out. We all said that at the time. You know, Justice League was too quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had they followed Man of Steel going to BVS, you know, if they'd just done a straight Batman movie, you know, first, you know, an Affleck Batman movie, you know, and do a Flash movie, you know, or certainly Wonder Woman then, great. You know, and personally, I think beyond the big three, maybe, you know, seeding the other characters in those other movies and then giving them their own movie, sure. Right away into Justice League, too fast. You know, they should have followed Marvel's playbook. But, you know, they wanted their Avengers immediately because Avengers, listen, but people forget. First four didn't make that much money. It did well.
Same thing with Captain America.
The first Cap, didn't make that
those
much money. Then Avengers was huge.
But those were being distributed by Paramount, and that was part of the whole. That was still being paid for by the fund. You know, Marvel went out and got that fund. It wasn't Disney yet.
But my point is, and then even after Avengers, like the first Guardians did well. You know, Doctor Strange did well, but they didn't make $1 billion, and they didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been rushed, and you know, Gunn understands that, and I think he's going to build it correctly. So we ask questions about what's next.
I think he's got some great pieces to keep in the tapestry.
So, but honestly, it is frustrating because you know we're looking at stuff that already exists, and we're wondering when we see it again. And this is where it gets frustrating. It might be quite a while, and that is problematic. You know, even the Marvel stuff. I mean, they set stuff up and then they leave it. I mean, Shang-Chi came out how long ago now? And then we actually get a tag at the end of Shang-Chi. You know, with Wong, Captain Marvel, and then nothing, you know? I mean, they set up the stuff with the sister at the end and nothing. Like, I'm waiting to see this stuff and I'm not seeing it. And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. They have so many freaking projects going and yet they have so many dangling threads.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a problem to me.
And we're going
to
see Captain Marvel again. We've seen Bruce again.
Sure.
And none of the Shang-Chi tie-in that was in those sequences.
So, and we're going to get it, but you know, and it was announced that the Shang-Chi sequel is still going to happen. And it's going to happen after the Avengers Kang movies. Now,
because the director's involved in that first one.
I feel pretty confident, if not just because of the director, but yes, that director, Shang's going to be in that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still, by the time that comes out, it's going to be what, 5-6 years since we saw Shang-Chi?
Yeah. He can still show up in the Marvels.
He could, but I'm saying, like, and maybe, but you know, it's to me that's majorly problematic. I think that they do get some of this. I think that both Captain America: New World Order and Thunderbolts are going to directly be building towards those Avengers movies. Specifically, I mean, they are doing some things politically, and that's the thing. We saw some politics, you know, in particular in Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know. But what's going on? There isn't an Avengers. I think what we're going to see directly set up in that Captain America movie leading into Thunderbolts is going to be, oh, there's no Avengers. We need a team. But that team's not going to be right. And I think it's probably going to be Falcon, Cap, you know, Sam Wilson going, no, we need the real Avengers.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I wish we were seeing those tags, you know, and we haven't been, you know? I mean, listen, they make a statement at the end of Guardians 3. Guardians 3 was great. Because it was a good movie and it did
well.
We
have a new Guardians team.
Yeah, but and we'll probably see those in that Avengers movie. Sure. Maybe, you know, maybe not. But what it said at the end is that Star-Lord will return. Well, he's on Earth.
Yeah.
He's ready for some
Avengers action.
Yeah. Where? I don't know. Is it Thunderbolts? Is it Avengers? I don't know.
In the Eternals? When are we going to see them again?
I don't know. And that's the thing. Is there going to be an Eternals 2? Does anyone want it? I don't know. Are we going to see the plot lines carried forward? Yeah.
I hope we do. I actually sincerely hope we do.
By the way, one of my biggest complaints for years and years was that leader set up in Incredible Hulk, and we're finally going to get it in Captain America.
Well, that was a Universal production versus...
But it counts in the MCU.
I know it does. I know it does. Yeah. So we're finally getting it. You know what, Ian? I think the problem here is your patience.
I don't think that's the problem.
you have a lot of patience. You don't have a lot of patience, and these things are multi-jillion dollar productions that take a while.
Ian, 15 years.
You're staying healthy.
I am.
You gotta stay healthier.
I'm fine. Because
you're gonna have to live till 90 to see all this. Okay, pal.
Seriously.
I hear you. Let's take it back to the topic. We want to see Jaime Reyes again and the rest of his family, and we want to see Ted Kord come along for that action.
Yes.
More Blue Beetle. Ian, thanks for joining me on this. I think we're going to come back for some Loki here in a bit.
Yeah.
Because we're not coming back for Kraven because that got pushed.
Yeah.
Love you, man. Say hi to Steph.
I will.
Say hi to Justin, who wasn't able to make it.
Say hi to Heidi.
I will say hi to Heidi. Geekscapists, subscribe to the podcast. I'm putting a little bit of audio extra on episodes. Not this one. This one, we went straight to Blue Beetle. That was the mission. But I've got some great interviews coming up. I've got some guests that I was like super stoked to talk about and talk to. But it all starts next week. So subscribe, share it with your friends, leave us 5 stars. That helps our visibility and all that. Geekscape, the more fun, okay? Thanks, Ian, so much, dude.
Cool.
Peace, buddy. Chapeline says hello. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.